man, here we go again. Up early, feed the dog, out the door, traffic, at the office, boss in some kind of mood today, no time for lunch, annoying coworker, no time to relax, bedtime. Then we gotta do it all again? No way. Because the best way to break up the mundane every day is to play at Wild Rose Casino and Resort. Slots, tables, sports, and a whole lot of perks when you join and play with your club wild card. So, let's play Wild Rose Casino and Resort, Clinton.
Hi, I'm Jim Street, owner of Streets Maintenance. As a licensed, insured, and bonded master plumber, I specialize in all plumbing repairs, including but not limited to water heater and sump pumps to toilet and faucet repairs and replacements. For more information about my business, I'm online at streetsmaintenance.com and Facebook, or give me a call at 400-4483.
400-4483. Hello, and welcome to the Hawkeye Hotspot podcast here on hawkfanatic.com. It is Thursday, May the 16th, about 9:15 a.m. Central Time. Cruising through May pretty quickly here. Quicker than I would like, Scott. I kind of like to savor May and June we'll get to it in this podcast. There's just no downtime. No. It just seems like there's more news and news and news. I am Rob Howe. That is Scott Docterman, if you're watching on YouTube, and the other voice you will hear on this podcast from The Athletic. Scott, back from vacation. Thanks again to John Bonenkamp for sitting in last week on the hotspot. Plenty to talk about this week. How was the vacation? Did you get any, did you do anything fun?
No, not really. I just stayed home. I didn't do anything.
The staycation.
It was a staycation. I had nowhere to really go.
Those are good sometimes.
Yeah. Because, you know, in all honesty, I'm going to L.A. next week for work. And so I'll be, and part of what I want to do is just get away, you know, like, but I, you know, stayed around. And then, of course, it's like, oh, yeah, then there's a quarterback commitment while I'm gone and all this other happy horse shit. But no, it's all is good. And yes, the funniest part to me, Rob, is May and June largely are supposed to be the times where you just kind of slow it down, go at a cruise control for a little while. And instead, when people always say, oh, what are you going to do now that the season's over? Oh, you know, I'm like, it's busier now than it was. I mean, it's just, you know, got the transfer portal, recruiting, coaches leaving, players coming in. It's, and then a bunch of other stuff on the side.
Yeah, the transfer portal has definitely changed the game in terms of news cycles throughout the year. It's just an additional aspect of this time of year when, as we've talked about on the podcast before, May is typically, you know, prep time, you know, prep recruits, coaches out on the road, you know, watching kids work out. It's a contact period through the month. And then June is, you know, camps on campus, prospect camps, kids get offers there. Then you have the official visit weekend towards the end of the month, although there'll be official visitors throughout the month, some big ones that we'll talk about as we get closer to that. But now you're incorporating the transfer portal in there for both basketball and football and other sports as well. And then I get back from my I got a lot of stuff done on Monday. I'll go for, you know, mid-afternoon walk. I come back. Oh, Lisa Bluta retired. So I just out of nowhere on a Monday. So, yeah, it's been crazy. And that's probably where we should start. That's the biggest news we've had in the past week is the retirement of Lisa Bluta as the Iowa women's basketball coach after 24 seasons. I remember covering her introductory press conference. And I think she was pregnant with her second child at that point. Hannah was little then. They've grown up here. They've grown up Hawkeye. And I can't say I'm surprised, Scott. I mean, I was surprised by the news because I hadn't heard any rumblings of it. But it also makes a lot of sense, the timing of it. It's just she's here for a quarter of a century and she retires. Mm. That's impactful. That's a lot. She's coached a lot of student athletes that have come through here and talked to a lot of fans and is a legendary coach around here. And it just, it's, you don't get these moments very often in this business.
You know, that's what's so weird is most of the time you have an idea when these coaches are going to leave in some respect. I mean, Hayden Fry, we all knew what path that was going to take, with all the others, for even the coaches that got fired, Tom Davis, we had a full year. Steve Alford, you knew that it was kind of ending in that direction. Licklider, you had a feeling it was going to get fired. Even if Fran would leave, that wouldn't have been a shocker at the end of the season. But with Lisa, it just was like ripping off the band-aid. It was like, whoa, I did not expect that, and part of it is she's leaving after back-to-back NCAA tournament or championship appearances. The other part is she's leaving at the absolute mountaintop of popularity. I mean, I think she is the most popular person in the state of Iowa right now, Rob. People love her. People in Iowa who support Iowa basketball absolutely adore her in a way that I don't think we've seen for any coach. But to her credit, and I can certainly go into detail after talking to Beth yesterday at length on everything, but with specific to Lisa, she got away. She needed to get away. She spent 5 weeks, and she and her husband David went down to Phoenix, and they had a vacation, and they talked about things. She talked to some coaches. She talked to other people, just to kind of see, is this the right time? And they kind of decided, yeah, it is. And for all the right reasons, that she's been doing it for 24 years. She's been very successful. And she's like, we want to travel while we're still healthy and, healthy enough to travel. She wants to go to Alaska. She wants to do things like that, which is kind of ironic considering she said what she'll miss the least is the travel in Big Ten. But
It's different.
there's a difference between,
Business and pleasure.
yeah, I mean, getting on a bus and going to Wisconsin in the middle of January versus, flying to Alaska and going on a cruise is, those two different things. But then you look at, she did it there. And then like her son, her youngest kid is a senior going into being a senior at Grinnell. He plays basketball there and she doesn't get a chance to go over there and watch him. Now she does. And, her daughters, one of her daughters is a teacher in Des Moines, I think Des Moines area. And Hannah's been on her staff. She's 63 years old. She to and to ramp it up again and again and again, it takes a lot out of you. And I would say the selfless side of her is she really handed it off at a perfect time. And then the timing of it itself, and we can go into that. And, could not have been set up better. Not as much by her, but by Beth Getz, who handled this situation more masterfully than pretty much any administrator I know.
Can you give kind of a synopsis of that for folks? Kind of what how this, because it wasn't like Beth had a lot of time to react to this. She did benefit by having a really, really good in-house candidate, but still, it's not that red tape is not easy to get through.
Right. I mean, in Iowa, you have a 14-day posting period that you're required to do. Now, there are waivers you can obtain for coaches based on competitive reasons. And the women's basketball qualifies for that. For instance, the athletic director's job does not. Football, when that happens, men's basketball, when that happens, they will also be allowed to have a waiver to ensure a quick transition. But
That's
this
so
all.
you don't lose a candidate that, yeah, I mean,
Yeah, I mean,
competitive from a competitive standpoint.
and this, you can look at it a couple of ways, and I'll start with this. The last week was a dead period for women's basketball. Nobody, but they couldn't even contact their own recruits.
Yeah, which is
So,
silly. That's such a silly rule.
yeah, I mean, if you're signed, you should be able to.
Yeah,
I
that's.
mean, that's laughable. But she last week is when Lisa told Beth. Beth had to figure out what was the next step, but they also wanted to make sure to push it back because, if you're one of the five incoming signed players and you can't talk to Lisa, you can't talk to Jan, you can't talk to Beth Getz, you can't talk to anybody, that'll freak you out over a
Yeah.
weekend, and especially Mother's Day weekend. That's really unfair to a lot of people. And so they decided to wait till Monday to make that announcement. And then Beth had to, she said, I had to decide or think at least, what was our next step? You know, I mean, she had a great in-house candidate and everybody knew that. But you're talking about the Iowa job now. And on a national scale, all but 10 to maybe 15 coaches would flock to get to this job. I mean, the whole place sold out last year. There's money in this program. There's NIL money in this program. It's got tradition. It's got everything you would want. It's not quite a blue blood yet, but it is certainly a powerhouse. And if you're Jenny Baranchik, if you're, you know, take your pick from, I would say, again, you know, Gino Auriemma is not coming here, but Don Staley's not coming here. But outside of them and a few others, you'd be like, I got to think about this. Katie Abrahamson, what would she do? You know, mm-hmm. what would even Brenda Freeze do? Hey, I got to be closer to my home and family and stuff. So she had to think about those opportunities, too. And then she said, I had a couple of sleepless nights. And then she called Jan, wanted to have a conversation. She thought about it. What should she do? And then ultimately decided that, yeah, Jan's the person I want for this job. That the reason why she's not a head coach now is because of her loyalty to Iowa, not because of the lack of opportunities. Because she said she had double digit opportunities yesterday, and there were about two that she was really like, maybe I should take that. But then they decided, because of the dead period, let's announce them on Monday. And they did it. There was a 23-minute difference between the announcements because they wanted to give Lisa her due because she deserves it. She's the winningest coach in Big Ten history. Mm-hmm. But they also didn't want to leave so much time. You know, I mean, in the old days, you could say, oh, we're going to wait a day, you know, or wait 2 days or a week or whatever. Yeah. But now you can't do that because of the players. Because as soon as that's open, then the questions start going, oh, my God, what am I going to do? You know, and that allowed – then they announced Jan. And in the interim, Jan said it was probably the most hectic day of her career. And she spent about 8 hours on the phone calling everybody to tell them exactly what – you know, just a talk. And obviously it worked. I mean, transitions are tough in this world. And but they didn't lose a recruit. They didn't lose a commitment. They didn't lose any of their players on their team. And I think, you know, I think Beth's mastery of how to space it out, to look it over, to ensure that it wasn't, because it wasn't automatic that Jan was going to get that job, but to look it all over, all angles, figure it out, and then approach it and announce it and do it in a way where they can be at their best. I mean, that's something that I'm not sure that other athletic directors in the past would have been able to accomplish.
Yeah, that would have been a challenge, no doubt about it. And it was met and achieved by Beth, and good on these guys for being able to figure this out. The logistics of everything. It's not an easy time of year too. It's friggin' last week was, you know, going into graduation and Mother's Day, as Scott said, there was a lot going on last week, just around here. For that to happen as well. So, you know, I think most, at least the Iowa women's basketball fans know the history here between Lisa Bluter, Jan Jensen, and Jenny Fitzgerald. That trio has been together for a long time. That Jenny and Jan played for Lisa at Drake. Then they were assistant coaches for her there and then came to Iowa with her and have been together. It's been an incredible partnership. Lisa's the head dog, and then Jan has obviously developed a lot of really good post players, and I don't think Jenny gets her due for what she's been able to do with the guards at Iowa. Just a tremendous guards coach, and it was just a great partnership, those three, for a lot of years. And now it'll be interesting for Jan going from that second seat to the first seat. That's a big move. And you know, how she handles players differently now and has a lot more administrative things that she has to handle, being the face of the program and kissing the babies and raising money and all that. She's good at all that. She's a very, very personable woman. So I don't doubt she'll do well there, but it'll be interesting. It's not a given that mm-hmm. she's going to succeed, but she's certainly prepared herself for this moment.
No question. And I think you know, first of all, we've known these people forever and the way that they've operated. And Jan has never felt like a true number two. She's felt like a 1B in this relationship, that it's more, you know, it's a partnership that she's faced and centered on a lot of situations that most assistant coaches aren't. I mean, does the general public know many of the, you know, men's basketball coaches, other than Matt, of course, because he's local, but, or even the football coaches, they've gotten to know him over time, but Phil Parker's not as active in the community, for instance, as and nobody is. And I don't even think coaches are, as Jan is this community focused, and nobody's a bigger cheerleader than her for Iowa sports. I mean, her Twitter handle is Go Iowa. I mean, she goes to all these events and she roots for everybody. And so it's going to be interesting because her personality, she's always been kind of the good cop. She's always been the one that's kind of helped smooth things over in the past. But I think she also has kind of that personality where she can get into the, she can be a little bit tougher if necessary. So, you know, but how does she handle that? You know, that's going to be a question. I mean, one thing I don't, Lisa does not get enough credit for how she managed Caitlin Clark all these years, because Caitlin, you know, has a Michael Jordan to her, you know, and that is, if people aren't playing to her ability and can't do the things that she does, she's very tough on them. And Lisa had to straddle that line of being, giving her all the freedom in the world, but also being able to rein her in when necessary. And Jan's going to have to manage egos, and that's the head coaching job. And who does she bring in? I mean, I think Abby Emmert Stamp is a future head coach in waiting, whether it's here or somewhere else. I think she's fantastic, but she's going to bring somebody else in as that third assistant. And how does that handle things? I mean, her recruiting level is going to be really high, but you know, I think the other part for Beth that you've got to think of, you know, detach yourself is, you know, can you, you know, what's the ceiling? Is there a ceiling? You know, can now is a, now it looks rosy and great, but you know, what if they are an 8 seed in the tournament this year? And what if they underachieve in another year? And then the shine comes completely off, and then you're at that mediocreville, you know, then what? You know, so whereas maybe if you hire, like I said, Jenny Baranchik, who's an Iowa alum, who loves this state just as much as anybody, you know, maybe she would reach it at a higher level. And you just, there's the unknown, but that's where you've got to trust your athletic director. And I think she's earned that trust from the people inside. And then also she's doing a magnificent job of running the athletic department over her first, but you know, well, I guess only about 4 months is the leader officially, but you know, the last 9 months in that role.
So what is the structure of the women's basketball coaching staff? I know Abby Stamp and Raina Harmon are full-time assistants. Jenny Fitzgerald is more like in an advisory on campus, non-recruiting coaching type role, and everything's changing too. It seems like we're moving towards the point where there's going to be just unlimited coaching in a lot of these sports. So, it'll be interesting to see just from a dynamic of, you know, can Jan spend as much time coaching like post players? Like she's been, how is she going to, you know, recruiting? She's been the lead recruiter for this program since Lisa got here. She's traveled the most. She's been literally the lead recruiter by far on this staff. So how does she handle that? Does she delegate some of that responsibility? She may have answered these questions too, but I watched some of the press conference yesterday when I was doing something else. But does she hire an assistant coach that's maybe has that post background to kind of take some of that off her plate? I think that's something that's interesting. Somebody asked me who I thought might be a possibility. Randy Peterson Henderson is somebody who played here, played for her, post player, been an assistant coach since she got done playing. She was with Kara Consuegra at Charlotte. I don't know if she moved with her to Marquette this offseason when Kara got that job, but she's somebody that came to my mind. I know there are a lot of great candidates, but it'll be interesting to see how they, because they've had such little change on their staff through the years that it is different that they're hiring an assistant coach.
It is because they even the ones that they've had, like when Jenny stepped aside and they elevated Abby, from director of ops. And Abby's, from a recruiting perspective, she's as good as it gets too. So I've heard when I was at the national tournament, talking to our national writers are very, very plugged in on the scene, and they're like, Abby's top shelf in just so many different areas. And so I would expect her to
And
take
Aya
more of that
Davis too.
money.
I was remiss to forget her, but yes.
Absolutely. And maybe she, so, and then I would expect Jan to still be instrumental in that. And I think she realizes it, but then again, she doesn't have to do that. And she does have more administrative responsibilities. So maybe she'd still want to go to some of that stuff, but she can also back off when needed. And, she said there are some things that, she's wanted to do differently that she's been outvoted on and vetoed, and now she wants to do differently. One of the things that she kind of brought up was, Raina's always been talking about wanting to do a full court press, and that's what we're going to do now, stuff like that. So there's going to be, opportunities for incremental change. The program structure itself is not going to change. I mean, these
Why
people have
would
been
it?
in, yeah, I mean, it's been successful in every single facet that you want. So I would expect her to continue to do that. Lisa will be an officially an advisor, kind of I would say kind of like a consigliere, she's the godmother now. I don't know if Jenny's going to stick around though. I asked Lisa about that on Tuesday, and she's like, I don't think so, but I don't really know. And because, yeah, she stepped away from the actual day to day, and now she's, I don't know if she's going to be with Jan or not. So, but I
She
think the
was
most.
a big part of what you referred to earlier of managing Caitlin. I think it took all three of them and beyond. Abby, with Caitlin's personality, that took a lot. And I wrote that in my column too, my Bluter column, that I don't think people really understand how good of a job they did for 4 years incorporating that personality, that emotion, and she needed that. I mean, you don't want to take it all away from Caitlin because she needs that. It's part of her game, but you also have to channel it in the right way. And the Iowa staff did a great job of that. And I had written that I think all of that timing happened, had Caitlin come along during the middle of Lisa's run where they were struggling a little bit, I don't think people realize that there were some tough years there about a decade in. But their ability and through the years, they prepared themselves for what happened these last few years to maximize what they had. And to me, that is Lisa's greatest accomplishment. And I think Jan and Jenny and everybody else on that staff deserve credit for that too. To get, I still have a sense, Scott, that people don't really appreciate what happened around here the 2 years, just in terms of making a national championship game 2 years in a row. That is around here. That's amazing.
I think people think of it as just simply Caitlin, and that's it. But you've got to do so much more. And I think any good manager or any manager that is self-aware will understand that it's not about doing the job. It's not about, and whether it's a basketball, being a sports editor or whatever, it's not about, hey, go out and cover this and write this story. Or it's not about, hey, X go here, shoot ball here. Managing ego is and managing people is the most challenging part by far and away, because you've got different people from different perspectives, backgrounds, feelings, thoughts. You could get in, you, one person wants you to get in their face, the next person will shirk away. And some people are passive aggressive, some people are ultra aggressive. And I think with Caitlin, it took a village to manage that, because she is, not only so competitive and an amazing talent, but it could rub people the wrong way very, very quickly. And again, I compare it to Michael Jordan because you saw it a lot. And Phil Jackson was that perfect guy to kind of manage him, because other people just don't have that athletic ability, that ability to play the game, just like with Caitlin. And so, you know, there was one time I remember, this wasn't last year, it was the year before, where she was trying to pass the ball to Monica Zidano in the post. And she, you know, Monica couldn't get the pass. And there was like two or three turnovers off of that. And there were some pretty good passes. And she looks over at Lisa and she just goes, five, no, like this. Like, I am not passing the five anymore. And then Lisa, timeout, comes over, starts, you know, really finger pointing, you know, getting her in her face, made her sit down. And then, but to her credit, about 2 to 3 minutes later, okay, you're in. And there was no lingering, there was no conversation. It was basically,
here's the line, here's the line, and you crossed it.
Yep. Knock it off. Okay, you ready? Go in and I expect you to do your job. Go do it. You know, no, but it wasn't like a prolonged tongue lashing or anything like that. It was because you don't want to, you know, like she said way back in October, she's like, you don't want to tell a thoroughbred, whoa. You know, you let them run. And that's kind of what she had to do with Caitlin. And that's what made Caitlin so successful. I'm anxious to see how she handles that in the next level, because the other night was mixed reviews, I would say, you know, 20 points and 10 turnovers. But anyway, you know, that's going to be another issue for another day.
I just think the way Lisa handled this, it was unprecedented, Scott, what they had to the distractions alone this year, just with, you know, no coach had to deal with what she dealt with in terms of the popularity of her team and on the road and keeping the locker room together. And, you know, there were losses here and there, you know, you're like, they lose the Kansas State at home. You're like, are they going to be okay without Sonano? Then they lose at Ohio State and Indiana. And you're like, are they going to, they're going to have trouble if they face a team with a really good post player in the NCAA tournament. She held it together. They won the Big Ten tournament again. They make it to the national championship game again. It was like none of the stuff on the outside, none of the distractions affected what they were doing. Coach deserves a hell of a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, this was a team with deficiencies. I mean, it didn't have the dominant post. I mean, it didn't have Zanano. Now, Hannah Stolke was a 4 playing 5, and she held her own in a lot of cases, and she's more athletic than most posts and did a really good job. But you need that traditional post player at times, and they didn't have that. And so that was a deficiency, and that was an issue, and yet they overcame it. And, you know, I thought that the first three losses were learning opportunities. It was Kansas State. You saw everybody defer to Caitlin. Caitlin had a bad day, and she, you know, they kept giving the ball to her. And it's like, you guys, you're going to have, you know, Kate, Gabby, you guys are going to have to step up. You can't just defer all the time. And then you look at, you know, big time leads in the fourth quarter against Ohio State, Nebraska, and losing. It's like, you've got to figure out how to manage, be a game manager, you know, go Ferentz ball, you know, and basketball, you know, stretch out the clock, you know, but get good shots. Indiana, I chalked that up to, you played a really good team on the road that was pissed off. It lost at Illinois. And it was like, here's your buzzsaw. And they're a really good team. They played South Carolina tougher than anybody else in the tournament. They only lost by 4. And then the last game, they're beaten by a better team, period. But even more than all the losses and all the wins, it's about the situations, because we've seen good Iowa teams, Rob, go into, you know, deal with high expectations and deal with intense scrutiny and flop and not be able to handle that stress and that pressure. And they seem to find a way to make it work for them. I mean, going on the road to all these places where everybody's there, and yet they came out, and even when they lost, it was just a singular loss. It wasn't a losing streak. It wasn't, you know, you didn't hear about any backbiting, and you know, and that goes back to Lisa. It goes back to Kate Martin. It goes back to the veteran leadership, Caitlin Clark, of course. But collectively, it is a Lisa Jan thing that they were able to manage that situation. And I think, that is something that, I've seen a couple of detractors who don't know their ass from a hole in the ground, say, oh yeah, she loses, a player like Caitlin Clark and she retires. It's like, well, no, she's, I would argue that this program is much different over the last 10 years than it was the previous 10, that since Sam Logic kind of came about, and then they started building with Sam and Ali Disterhoff, but then really took a jump with Megan Gustafson, and of course, hopped up, went to a completely new stratosphere with Caitlin Clark. And because, yeah, back 15 years ago, there were a lot of the people were saying the same thing about her that they are about Fran. And but the interest in women's basketball then wasn't what it is in men's basketball.
Yeah, that was kind of the that was the not kind of that was the lead of my co the Bluter column was me. There was a scene set of me in her office. I think it was like two after the 2008 2009 season, maybe. They had finished first and second in the Big Ten those years back to back after not making any postseason the year before that run, but they hadn't made it to the Sweet 16, which, to Scott's point, is what a lot of the conversation is around men's basketball right now. But the Iowa program hadn't made the Sweet 16 since Angie Lee's first year after taking over for Vivian. And then Lisa made it in what, 2015? So that was a long time. And it got. And I sat in her office and she looked across the desk and she knew I was going to be asking questions she didn't want me to ask. And like you said, we've known her for a long time. And I mean, I was at John Real's wedding with her, a former newspaper person at the Gazette, who's friends of John and I, or for of Scott and I. But was just, what is it going to take for you to get over that hump? The same questions that Alford answered and Licklider answered and Franz answered. So it was a fair question, and she handled it pretty well. And she just said, I've got to stick with what we know how to do. And she did that. And, it took time, but I sometimes, success, it's not linear. And sometimes it just, you have to catch things right. And I think it was Jan figuring out who had to perfect coaching post players. And you saw it get from Jamie Cavey to Bethany Doolittle to you go through the list of post players she had, and they got better and better and better and better. And then you ended up with Megan and Monica. And now you have Hannah. Those are arguably three of your best. And then you watched as Jenny coached the guards, as you said, from Camille Whalen to go through the list, all the way up through to Sam, to Allie, to then Caitlin comes along. And it's just the three of them built that all up together. But it could have been a situation, Scott, where somebody of influence could have said, listen, you're just not getting it done. You're not getting us to the Sweet 16. We need somebody in here to raise this back to where it was when Vivian was here. Thankfully, they gave her a chance to continue on. And I'm not saying she ever deserved to be fired, but she was in that spot, as Scott said, where people were wondering if she could get it done.
Yeah, it's a purgatory. And if you can't get there, Fran's never gotten there at Iowa, and Lisa at that point hadn't either. And then people start to say, well, it's a purgatory. It's going 8-4 every year in football. It's getting winning 20 games and not going to the Sweet 16. We saw it end Tom Davis's career at Iowa. So it, and you have, now I'll say this, there's pluses and minuses to the Gary Barta era. We know them all, and we can talk about them all summer if we needed to. But one of the things he did, I think, in most cases, really well, was be very patient, provide support, and provide financial support to the main programs. So the years that she was going through good seasons, not great seasons, just kind of steadiness. And ultimately, what it all comes down to, Rob, and we can see this, and we've been hinting at it all the whole time, players. Players make the difference. coaches can bring you up, you know, can provide the floor, players provide the ceiling.
Yep.
And so Elisa Bluder coach team with great young women who are semi-talented can maybe get you to the tournament. But it takes a Megan Gustafson to get you to the Elite Eight, and it takes a Caitlin Clark to get you to the final game of the season. And they're probably I would say that they're more likely to find a Megan Gustafson than a Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
But if they have a backcourt of Cash Alexander and Sam Logic and a forward like Ali Disterhoff and a post like Monica Zanano, they're going to be pretty fucking good. You know, it doesn't have to be Caitlin Clark. And the thing is, you've seen that. You know, there have been those players that have just consistently gotten better and better over the years. So I think this was the right choice. In 3 years, you know, people could swat at me and say, oh, they should have done this. But I think, first of all, the current athletic director did a marvelous job of masterfully putting this all together. And then second of all, it's to celebrate the career of Lisa Bluder and the opportunity that she provides now with Jan Jensen, which is she hands Iowa at the highest level, the highest opportunity. Because what would have happened, Robin, let's say she waits till she's 65 to retire. And Iowa this year with Lucy Olson, maybe they're fifth in the Big Ten. They're a sixth seed in the tournament. They win one, they lose one. Maybe the year after that, they're kind of in the same boat. Iowa's shine isn't quite as great. And as we know, sometimes it's easy to get comfortable or not provide that same kind of energy. And, you know, Jan's going to be majorly focused. You know, this is her opportunity. She's going to push it as hard as she can. And that's just, to me, the perfect opportunity for her is this program is in great position. Now, if you push hard, you can maintain your spot on, you know, among college basketball's elite rather than falling. Lisa retires, great career, you know, kudos, Lisa. And then you got to try to build it back up. And even then, you know, Jan Jensen's 57, 58. And then do you make that higher? I think, you know, you look at it in a decade perspective, 55 to 65, Jan Jensen has the opportunity to really take this program and maintain its high standard.
And then when she's done, you've got, you know, potentially Abby Stamp or Jenny Voracek or Kara Consuegra. There's some good candidates out there.
Or Kate Martin.
Kate Martin, who knows? Yeah. So yeah. Healthy program, healthy history, healthy future. And look forward to seeing what the new era of Iowa women's basketball is going to be like. It's kind of one of these things that we thought was potential, had potential to happen. And now it actually happened that Jan took over for Lisa. And now we see how she can do as a head coach.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I always wondered if Jan really wanted to be a head coach, you know, kind of like Phil Parker, you know, you know, it's like, you know, Phil doesn't really want to. Yeah. He just likes to coach and football is a different animal altogether. Anyway, I mean, to be a CEO, I mean, you're talking about a, you know, $120 million corporation. But, you know, with she's for so long and been that steady, you know, sidekick to Lisa, you know, she'd been with her 32 years, Drake and at Iowa that, well, she just wants to be that position. So who's going to be the next coach and will she stay? Well, yeah. No, she wants to be a head coach. It wanted to be the great opportunity. And, you know, what she said was so heartfelt, you know, I'm an Iowa girl. I've been here my whole life. I love this state. I love the city. It's obvious she loves Iowa City because Iowa City loves her. She's a perfect fit in this community. And then obviously the players feel exactly the same way and, you know, current, future, former, they all feel the same way. So I think Iowa women's basketball is in great hands in the short term. And I have confidence that it'll be in a great position in the long term.
I would agree. And, we'll see how they do this year. A lot of turnover, obviously, and you lose four starters. So it'll be interesting to see kind of the, as Scott said, maybe more, you know, full court press, some different aspects of basketball we haven't maybe seen before, but be interesting to see how this goes. It'll be fun. And as Scott said, Jan has the support of the community, and that is a big deal. If you have the community support that helps you build the program around the community, and that's always a good thing. So look forward to seeing how this pans out. And I'm sure we'll have plenty more to talk about on that topic moving forward. Probably good time to take a break here. We've been yapping for about a half an hour. Support for the podcast comes from Systems Unlimited, celebrating 50 years of providing services to people living with disabilities and mental health needs throughout East Central Iowa. A list of their services and upcoming events can be found at sui.org. That is sui.org. Thank you, Systems Unlimited. Great work in the community for over half a century, and we certainly appreciate its support of the podcast. Going to hear from a few more sponsors now. Scott and I will be back on the other side to talk some Iowa football, men's basketball, a little baseball as well. So hang in there.
Hi, this is AJ Perez, managing partner at Deere Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram of Waukee and Iowa City. I'm so proud of our team at both locations. We are committed to one thing, giving our customers the absolute best when it comes to service and a car buying experience, the kind of experience that brings you back. What makes us different? We believe at Deere, we don't just sell cars, we help people buy them.
Do you need a great electrical contractor or fire and water restoration specialist? Well, contact Lance Bolin at LB Electric and LJ Construction in North Liberty. Lance has served the corridor for many years and is ready to help you. Call Lance Bolin at 319-640-1116. That's 319-640-1116. Or visit LJ_construction on Instagram for licensed and insured electrical work, fire and water restoration, and remodeling.
And we are back here on the Hawkeye Hotspot podcast on HawkFanatic.com to let you know that switching is easy. We do it all the time. We switch on the lights. We switch TV channels. Some of us switch partners while square dancing. Well, that's a stretch. But what's not a stretch is how you can switch and save with State Farm. In fact, State Farm agent Chad Birch right here in Iowa can switch you over so you can start saving today. Chad and his team are ready to welcome you to the State Farm neighborhood. With Chad Birch, it's easy to switch and save. Just give him a call when you want the real deal, like a good neighbor. State Farm is there. You do any square dancing on vacation?
I did. Yeah.
It's good to know you didn't miss that opportunity.
I know. Last Thursday, in fact, I was starting to think, I'm like, I'm missing out. So I got out the stuffed animals, my daughter's stuffed animals, and my cat, and we did some...
I'm sure the cat appreciated that.
Yeah, he did. You know, he was like, you know, if you're going to do this, give me a great big box so I can set it.
or a paper bag.
Yeah. Shake the sack and have him run away because he's scared of it.
You got to talk to Lisa, actually, on when was that? Tuesday?
Tuesday.
In Des Moines, Polk County Yacht Club event, Kirk Ferentz, Beth Getz, Matt Gatens, and a cast of thousands along with Scott were down there. We got the answer to the question that folks wanted, Scott, which is, what is the quarterback situation going into camp? What did you make of the statement that if healthy, Cade is number one, but Brandon has a chance to challenge him? There's enough gray area here that we don't know kind of – you know, they're words. It's May, they're words.
Yeah, they're words put together, occasional punctuation, you know, that sort of thing. It's not surprising. It's what you would expect this time of year. But I wanted to hear him say it.
Yes, and I think that's important.
You know, because you are bringing in a starting quarterback from a rival in your Big Ten conference who started two games against you. You're bringing him in in the transfer portal, and your current quarterback is recovering from an ACL. What's the pecking order? Where do they sit in the world?
And neither one is like a freshman with a lot of time on their side.
Yeah. One has 1 year, one has two.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have a new offensive coordinator. What does he think? So I think Kirk outlined it about as best as Kirk ever would. And I don't have any faults with him on this. Cade McNamara is the starting quarterback. Okay, well,
seriously, how does he know, Scott? No. How much has he seen Cade McNamara practice?
Yeah,
you know, and he doesn't know. He has to see Brandon Sullivan. So really, I mean, he could go in with a plan, but that plan could one of those guys could ruin that plan.
Exactly, and So in a couple, what, a month or what, 3 to 4 weeks, I guess it would be, when the players come back to campus. And if Cade McNamara is healthy, and that they expressed optimism that he will be, that Cade McNamara will be. But in the summer, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's just they're throwing 7-on-7 or whatever, and nobody cares. And then going into August, they're going to be working with the same offensive playbook, the same quarterback, coach slash offensive coordinator. Somebody's going to get more reps with the first team. And that right now, that's Cade McNamara. But with a new offensive coordinator, and if, and it'll be easy to spot, I'm sure, if they believe that, wow, Brendan Sullivan is the best player for this position, then I think then they're going to have to go in that direction. I mean, but, and I, at the same time, if all things
we
are
equal, also have a long history of sticking with the number one.
Exactly.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt and steal your thunder there, but it popped in my head. I knew where you were going.
You know, we've seen this over and over and over again, that Kirk gives the quarterback more leeway than any other position, any other person, you know, other than offensive coordinator, more leeway to do good, bad, or bad, even worse than anybody else. So I would expect it to be Cade's job. And the only way that it won't be is if Brendan Sullivan clearly outplays Cade in the August and then in early September. Because I think barring just a collapse or a disaster or a major injury, Cade McNamara is going to start the first game. I don't even think, even if it gets outplayed in camp, I think it'll be that way. And then, you know, we'll see what happens in the third quarter against Iowa State, who I think will be pretty good. And it's a close game and he's missing passes. Then that's when controversy will rear its head.
Yeah. And again, Kirk said there's no reason to believe that Cade won't be ready health wise to go by the start of training camp, but it's not known. I mean, you never know if there's a setback or just he's not feeling good enough when he gets back out there, he's feeling the effects of being off for as long as he's been off, then maybe he's not as ready to practice early on in camp. Sullivan comes in, starts lighting it up. There's just so many unknowns that we don't know. But at least we have the structure of what it's going to look like going into August, all things being equal, everybody healthy. This is what it looks like. So we have that idea of, you know, the hierarchy at least going in. But it'll be interesting because this is – we talked about Bluder and Jensen and those guys being able to manage the Caitlin Clark. This is a management situation too, where you're bringing a kid in who left a program because he, you know, didn't know if he was guaranteed to be the starter at Northwestern. They've got a bunch of different bodies there, and they hadn't really named the starter yet. So – that was still going to play out in camp. So he comes here. What do you tell him? You know, what are your chances to win this job? What are you telling Cade? You brought him in to be the starting quarterback. It's a lot of management that goes on there too. And that continues all the way through because you get a little disruption. Then we're back in 2014 with Jake Rudock and CJ Beathard.
Yeah. And I would take either one of those two quarterbacks right now over the two that they have.
I would too.
You know, Jake Rudock just had the unfortunate timing of when that all happened. I mean, if I honestly say this, if you would have had Jake Rudock in 2008 or 2020, Iowa wins the Big Ten. Either one of those.
Probably
years.
Right.
You know, but that said, you know, Cade has built up more equity with Kirk than he has with anybody else. And because he wasn't real good early in the year last year. Now, granted, that a lot of that had to deal with the torn quad that he was rehabbing, trying to get back. He lost all of his training camp early in the season. He was very limited. They were limited in the playbook and what they could allow. And then he tears his ACL. And then they were just SOL the rest of the season. So, you know, what if, and this is a big what if Cade's actually good? What if he comes in and plays well?
That was the idea when they signed him however long ago, now 2 years ago, a year and a half.
Right. I mean, you know, because you think back, it's like, when has Iowa had really outstanding quarterback play. And I mean, Nate Stanley was good. He had a lot of touchdowns, but I don't think anybody got the feeling that this is a first team all Big Ten guy, you know, and any in key moments, there were a lot of misses, and that was really unfortunate. I thought he played really well, but I also think that he was like a B level quarterback. Beathard in 15 was probably the last really good year that Iowa had, but you know, and then people will, you know, you could talk about Stanzi all you want. 2010, he was really efficient. The team lost a lot of close games. And then 2009, he was really erratic and the team won a lot of close games. And, you know, probably Drew Tate in 04, you know, but yeah. Anyway, what if Cade comes in and completes 62% of his passes? He throws 20, 21, 23 touchdowns and only a handful of interceptions. And this offense looks pretty good. What happens? I mean, you know, that's like the one scenario that I'm like, I haven't even really thought about yet.
Quarterback play? And I think part of that is just because we haven't seen him. We haven't seen him play well. Like you said, he was compromised by the injury last year at the beginning of the season and wasn't very effective. And then he got hurt. Mm-hmm. So it's just, we don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly fine to be glass half full. And hey, the guy you brought in a year and a half ago to be the guy may be the guy. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly, I think there's the aspect of him missing so much football, Scott, for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Where is he at just from a, a sharpness standpoint? How much rust is there going to be?
Yeah, that really enters into the conversation in August. I mean, I think we're all, I won't even say cautiously optimistic. I think we're looking at this with clear eyes and no preconceived notion at this quarterback situation. That's how I'm looking at it anyway, is I'm not saying, yeah, he's got it. I threw out the what if as that's a scenario that I haven't really thought through, but he has only played in 8 games the last 2 years. He's had knee surgery, torn quad, ACL. Is he going to be healthy? I think even in the spring, watching him sling it and just the drills that he was throwing in, he clearly has the best arm and accuracy of the guys that were there. I can't speak to Brandon Sullivan. He had to face 2, you know, really good Iowa defenses. But he still, you know, threw a couple touchdown passes. But I just think, it's all right now. No reason to just rain on everything here, but it's fair to be skeptical. You know, I think be skeptical of, well, you know, not be a hater, not be a doubter, just be skeptical that, you know, we haven't seen it yet. That doesn't mean it can't happen. It's just if he's healthy, and health is the big factor with him.
And whoever it is will be, have another weapon in the wide receiver room. We also learned on Tuesday that Northwestern receiver, former teammate and now current teammate of Brandon Sullivan, Jacob Gill, originally from Raleigh, North Carolina. Somebody asked me if Iowa recruited Jacob Gill out of high school, and I said to myself, I cannot remember the last time Iowa had a player from North Carolina.
No, I
can't. You?
No. Not
That's just an area that they have never recruited since I've been around.
The only player I can remember with even North Carolina roots would have been Tyler Goodson, but he moved to the Atlanta area, like actually, middle school.
Isn't Drew Stevens from North Carolina? Am I an idiot? I'm an idiot.
No, South Carolina.
South Carolina. Okay. So they do recruit in that area. Yeah. Just not, you know, regular. Well,
quarterbacks and kickers are the areas where they'll go nationally.
Yep.
You know, and it's a walk-on. You know, a kicker and because, you know, where's the trip, the kid that came in?
He's from one of the Carolinas too, isn't he?
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
From North Carolina.
Right.
But so, it's a small group.
Right. they don't go to Charlotte and Raleigh Durham and
no.
And you know, because if you're Iowa, why would you? You know, you know, you've got 4 ACC teams in the state. Then you'd go north a couple hundred miles, and you've got Virginia Tech, you've got South Carolina, you got Clemson, you got Georgia, you got SEC in the neighborhood. You're better off.
It's not as talent rich as like going to Florida and getting second and third year tier players that don't want to go to Florida State, Miami, and Florida. There's a lot more to choose from in that state.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you could go to, you know, Miami or, you know, South Beach or whatever, and then you could plug, well, none of the big three offered him, and nobody in the SEC is really looking at him. So it's between you and Wake Forest for this guy. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay. You could fight that battle, but North Carolina, forget it. So I forgot where we were going with this.
We were talking about Gil and Gil. Okay. Jacob Gil, 16 catches, 195 yards, and two TDs in his time at in Northwestern. He had one catch for 11 yards last year, played only four games, so I assume that's a redshirt year for him. So he has 2 years at Iowa.
That is correct, yes.
So I don't know, Scott. Statistically, it's not very impressive. Poked around and looking for a little bit of his film, couldn't find a whole lot. He hasn't played a whole lot. I don't know. Iowa needed a receiver. This guy has familiarity with the new quarterback. I'm sure Sullivan probably advocated for him. So maybe there's something here.
You never know. I mean, what we do know about this unit is that it is the most depleted group on the roster, and there's no doubt
especially
about
it. Especially now that they address quarterback.
Yeah, right. So, you know, what do you have? And Jacob Bostic goes to Texas A&M, which still floors me to no end.
Make that make sense.
And I can't. I can't at all. I figured he was probably like, oh, Northern Illinois, you know, maybe another MAC school or something. No, he's
he had better offers coming out of Iowa than he did high school.
Yeah, and he didn't have a catch.
Do anything here.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know where to go with it from there. But no, I mean, but Iowa has, you know, what, Caleb Brown, Seth Anderson, Caden Wiegen.
Those are your top three right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's probably your top three. You probably need five, maybe six. Because
we just don't know with Howard and Bowie right now where they are development wise.
Right. You know, is Alec Wick going to be a guy that maybe makes the rotation? Then you've got two walk-ons in that category. Jacob Gil, if nothing else, maybe he's just a guy. Maybe he's just a guy that they plug in there and runs routes and he's good. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's, you know, but right now he has experience. He started games in the Big Ten. He's played for a Big Ten team. He's going into his fourth year, so he's older. He's a veteran. He sees the clock ticking. They don't have a lot of people in his position right now. So I think that makes sense. You know, go get somebody who, you know, is going to help this unit. And maybe if he's any good, then you've got a real plus. Right now, you know, again, Iowa can't be, you know, Iowa's begging at this point because of their lack of production the last several years. I mean, you know, the last 2 years, they've each year has produced 76 catches by the wide receiver group. That's tied for the lowest since 1982 with each other. And then you go back not that far in 2019, that unit had 169 catches when you had Brandon Smith, Amir Smith-Marset, Tyrone Tracy. Charlie Jones didn't play, but Nico Ragaini, Oliver Martin. And you had players that, I mean, Oliver Martin back then, well, he's not good enough to get on the field, but now, he'd be the number one, you know. He should have went to the Peace Corps for a few years or something. But, you know, but you have that, and then you go to this. Now, and what I'll say is, if they can demonstrate moving in the right direction, I do think they need a young player. You know, a redshirt freshman, even a true freshman, to step in and be a part of the rotation. And that could be Bowie. That could be Dayton Howard. That could be Reese Vanderzee. It doesn't matter. Somebody needs to come in and probably play the X position. If they can, and they show progress, then you can build upon that in recruiting and in coaching later. Because that 1 year parlayed Iowa into getting Keegan Johnson and Arlen Bruce, and then you have Charlie Jones, and then they did nothing with them, and now they have to do something in order to. But it won't take long. I mean, if Iowa can have a good season out of that group, they could parlay that into maybe another nice recruit or two, and then you know, then maybe in a transfer would look at them, and then they can change radically after that.
Yeah, they went after the kid from Missouri State, Raylan Sharp. He ends up at Fresno. And then the kid from North Dakota State, Eli, what was his name? Is it Carter?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I may have the last name wrong, but he ended up at Iowa State. Those were two of the main guys Iowa was after. As Scott said, when you don't have something to show the prospect, you know, just in terms of, hey, this is how we're going to some film of last season. This is where how we're going to use you. They just don't have that. They don't have the production at the position to be able to convince guys to come here instead of going somewhere where they've had success in the passing game.
Yeah, it's Eli Green.
That was close.
But no, you know, you're right, because if you're somebody who wants to take the next step, I mean, all these guys want to go to the NFL. And if you're moving up from FCS to FBS and you have opportunities to go somewhere where they have demonstrated success passing the football, that's where you want to go, because you can't do it coming to Iowa and
NFL will find you anywhere.
Yeah. It's like you would rather go. I have no problem thinking they'll go to Fresno State. Maybe he'll catch 60 balls there. Here, it might be 28. And that's like Charlie Jones catching 27, 28 catches and, you know, or I think it was 19, actually, now that I think about it. And then going and he gets 100 receptions at Purdue and plays that into an NFL draft pick. Tyrone Tracy, you know, even, you know, now he moved positions, but still, it's understandable. But, you know, here you go. Now's your chance. And then I think with Jacob Gill, we don't know, but there's not a much of a resume. But he'll have the opportunity now, because their quarterback situation wasn't real good either. You know, so Iowa took their number one guy. but you'll now have a chance to see what can happen.
I don't want to have people in the chat room say that we ignore them in the YouTube chat room, so I'll hit on these real quick. Scott, your opinion here, Fran, Kirk, or Brands? Who's next?
Fran.
Agree. Llama Power Hawkeye, and we won't spend a lot of time on this. Will you address John B., I'm assuming John Budmeyer, losing a portal transfer to Iowa State, or does Iowa have you guys bottle up on talking about John Budmeyer? We've talked about John Budmeyer, and we have, I don't know about questioned, but certainly taken a wait-and-see approach with him as a wide receiver coach. But I'm not sure what we can say or do here on this podcast that's going to change anything, other than he's, to me, I don't even want to call it a probationary period. He's got to show me that he can do that. He can recruit the position and develop at the position. Those are the two. As long as I've been doing this, you're at Iowa, you're a receivers coach. You have to have a really good eye for talent, and then you have to develop those players. Amir Smith-Marset, Brandon Smith, Tavon Smith, DJK, Marvin McNutt. Those were all guys that didn't come in here as 4 or 5-star high school prospects. They came here and developed. And that's what you need out of John Budmeyer. Can he do that? I don't know. I'm not going to start ripping the guy now without seeing how he can do. That's my take. What say you, Scott?
Yeah, I'm in the same ballpark, because I'm not even going to rip him this year. What does he have to work with?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, is he going to be a miracle worker? I mean, we just talked about how the woes of this unit. How are we supposed to say that, oh, my God, they're not the best unit in the Big Ten? I mean, what I want to see is improvement. I want to see more catches. I want to see more openings. And a lot of that was offensive scheme. It was schematic. There were a lot of plays where, and even beyond that, you had the, you know, really bad quarterback play. I saw a lot of changes, and they work hand in hand from what I've been told, and that John Budmeyer and Tim Lester are.
I saw it at the open spring practice. I watched them both working with the wide receivers together.
Because it's teaching quarterback and teaching receiver, so the passing game is seamless. And there's a lot more spacing in this offense, in this scheme. Losing a receiver in a portal, that has nothing to do with John Budmeyer. What's John Budmeyer got to show? I just got hired to the job. I mean, what would Hines Ward show? You know, I mean, Iowa's offense is Iowa's offense. We all know that. I mean, it's, and let's face it, it needed a change. There needed to be a change. I've addressed this before.
Yep.
From 2018 through 2022, 10 scholarship freshman receivers came in. 9 left the program with eligibility. 8 transfer, 1 baseball. And then you bring in 2 other transfers, Charlie Jones and Oliver Martin, and they transferred too. So is that on John Budmeyer? He wasn't here. You know, they needed to make a change. Now, we can decide, disagree, or we can agree that maybe that wasn't the right coach, but we don't know. And now that he's got the job, what good is it for us to sit here and bitch about it? There's no good in it.
It's certainly appropriate to question the hire. And absolutely. We've done that. I don't know what more else we can do with this. I know people are upset with losing players to Iowa State and not being able to get wide receivers in the transfer portal, but we've laid out the reasons why that's happening. Mm-hmm. It's not John Budmeyer. Could they have gotten a coach in here that maybe gets one or two of those guys that were in the transfer portal because he's a name guy? Maybe. I don't know. But it's I don't think Eli Green or Sharp are changing. They're not coming in here and being all Big Ten receivers anyway. It's not like they're losing out on guys that could come in here and just they haven't even been in with somebody at the level of Caleb Brown.
Yeah, right. I mean, Caleb Brown was a 4-star.
All right. I mean, they're not even sniffing that level right now in the transfer portal.
Yeah, yeah. And you got to write it out now. You know, is John Budmeyer, he wasn't a wide receiver. I get it. And I advocated, I said, maybe they need to go get a grad assistant who was a name receiver so he could be kind of a confidant, big brother, and also on the field, really, you know, this is how John wants it done. This is how I've done it. Try to do it this way. Yes, I believe in that. I thought Marvin would have been a great hire there. I've always said that. But they chose differently. And at this point, what else can I do? And, you know, they haven't played a game yet. They haven't coached a real practice. Spring doesn't really count. So it's we're a long ways away. And this fall, we're just going to have to see how it all comes together. And it may take time. In fact, I guarantee it takes time. We may not know until mid to late October, you know, how this is all developing.
Yeah, it's like a lot of aspects of Iowa football for me, and I know Scott has expressed the same sentiment. It's a wait and see when it comes to Iowa's offense. You got it. The quarterbacks, we don't know. Receivers, Luke Lachey's coming. He looks good, but he's coming back from a major injury. I mean, there's Estrenga was out there in spring. I don't think it was serious, but, you know, there's guys banged up on the offensive line. I mean, we need to get to the season and then reevaluate things. Evaluating things like this in the off season, once the decisions have been made, is just a futile effort and not something that we need to partake in here. We also had a high school commit in the 25 class, Scott. We were running out of time, so I don't want to take too much time diving into this one. Plenty of time to talk about the 2025 class. It is now up to 7 members with the addition of Drew McPherson out of the Chicago area. He will join Joey Van Wetsinga, Burt Goucher, Carson Cooney, Jimmy Sullivan. So there'll be 2 quarterbacks on the roster next year named Sullivan, I just realized. Eli Johnson and tight end Thomas Meyer from Clear Lake. He's an interesting prospect. I don't know if you've seen McPherson's film, Scott. He plays running back and receiver in high school, but he's coming in here as a safety. Really athletic, really interesting. Encourage people to go watch the huddle highlights. It's he looks like a guy that can do well under the tutelage of Phil Parker. He's got that starter kit. So one of those could be one of diamond in the rough types for Phil.
Yeah, we've seen that before. We've seen, you know, a high school dual threat quarterback from Western Iowa come here to be a safety and turns out to be a corner and turns out to be one of the more dynamic players we've ever watched here. So I'm not suggesting that, but what I'm saying is
that pressure on Drew McPherson.
Yes, Drew.
He's the next coach.
Yeah. Exactly. And whoever's coming in at point guard for Iowa, Leah Guyton, you're the next Caitlin Clark.
Yes.
But no, that, you know, that's what they do. They do a really good job. They get into Chicago. This is where you want to be. It's a recruiting battle zone. And you want to pluck guys that you feel like fit you character wise, but, and you know, good athletes that you can train. And he plays on the offensive side of the ball. He flipped to defense. It's really there's no issue there. I think it's a good pickup. Anytime you can get into Chicago and get a pick, you know, I think you do it. And you know, and right now, like, kind of the rising star of the secondary this spring was John Nestor, and he's a Chicagoland guy from Marist, and you know, same school as Sidney Falder. So Southside pride.
Yeah, and they also just offered a really impressive defensive tackle in the 25 class that I like quite a bit, Brad Fitzgibbon.
Right.
He'll be officially visiting here next month with a whole mess of other kids in the 25 class. As we've talked about on this podcast and we'll continue to talk about, very, very important stretch for the 2025 class here in the next couple months. A lot of receiver offers going out. Check my Twitter feed. I've written about a lot of them. Ohio, Florida, they're offering all over the place, Scott, trying to cast a wide net in terms of trying to get this class filled out. Seven guys, you're probably looking, you know, 15, 20 range with the portal these days. So plenty of work to do on this class so far, as I've mentioned. Joey Van Wetsika, most likely a center, but you keep the door open if you need help at defensive tackle, and he shows that he's capable of playing there, but I'm pretty sure he gets his first look at center. Then you've got two linebackers, the quarterback, two tight ends, and the safety. So, yeah. Again, as we've talked about the last 15 minutes or so, got to get that receiver position. Got to get a couple, two, three guys in this class to develop, because you're not going to get 4- and 5-star kids. You got to – this is an important time for John Budbauer, right, Scott? Identification here and then closing the deal, getting them in here, and then develop them along with guys like Bowie and Howard.
You know, I think I would push to make Mason Woods a wide receiver.
Yeah, he's got that potential, depending on how you know, develop his body.
Yeah, and if it changes, if it moves, you know, then make the move. But he's one that I think can play that position. And you know, they've already got two tight ends. You don't need to make, you know what I mean, to go three. It's just not that world anymore. You know, and then on the defensive side, they've loaded up at linebacker. You know, they have three incoming guys this year, two in this class, you know, for really two spots. I think you don't want to get carried away there. Although I think Carson Cooney is pretty highly thought of, you know, from Oswego. So I think, I don't know. I just think that right now you got to get some receivers in this class, and he might be a guy, you know, as they always say, get him on the bus and then figure it out. But I don't know. I think he's got X receiver potential. You might want to lean into that.
It's interesting, too, because the Juju Manson, who is a year behind him at West High, who is the son of Jason Manson, 6'3", 200 pounds, plays safety and wide receiver. He'll be a junior this year. I think he's about to break out. He's running – I think he qualified definitely top eight in the 200 open at state track. At 6'3", 200 pounds. And he also runs on the 4x1 and 4x2 with Mason Woods. So could be some help across town.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, you know, you could walk there. You don't even have to ride a bike. You can just walk from Kinnick to West High, Best High, and, you know, get your, I say that where you were in a little Hawk shirt. I'm living in North Liberty, but my son graduated from West High. So I can
say I have a lot of love for the West Siders. Know a lot of people over there. Yeah. They also have a junior to be offensive lineman, Colin Winters, who I like a lot. And then you'll hear about a kid called Barnett. Last name Barnett, eighth grader,
who will be James. Yeah.
He's going to be pretty good in track and football. So, things looking up on West Side. We're a little worried on the East Side here, Scott. You guys are up in North Liberty, too. They got some kids coming at West Side.
Yeah, North Side pride. I'm just glad they're all finally playing each other in football. You know, after the first few years where Liberty didn't play West, I thought, oh, that's ridiculous. But I'm glad that they're doing that.
Last but not least, we're going to get to men's basketball. And we've got a couple of things here. We've got Peyton Sanford working out at the NFL or the NFL NBA draft combine in Chicago right now. Kind of that is a un well, that is a developing situation, so to speak. We'll see how the next couple of weeks play out for him, what he decides to do. Andy Katz said he thinks he's coming back. I've heard other people think he's staying in. We'll see. We'll have an answer here before long. So stay tuned on that one. And if he comes back, he's going to have a new teammate in Seydou Traore. Traore?
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce that.
I apologize, Seydou. I can say your first name, but Traore, Traore. We'll get it when you get here. Again, I'm a writer, not a – although I do a lot of podcasts. I didn't think I'd have to know the pronunciation of everybody's names. But interesting prospect, Scott, out of Manhattan College. That is in the Bronx, New York, the Riverdale neighborhood. I used to live – very close to there when I was young and used to go and play basketball in that gym. He is from New York City, averaged over 11 points and 8 rebounds as a true freshman last year. Much like the receiver position for Iowa, getting guys out of the transfer portal for Iowa men's basketball is challenging. And I think this is a good add, considering the level that Iowa is shopping on. At the stores that they're shopping at, I guess, in the transfer portal.
Yeah, and I honestly, because there's been so much going on in the last few days, I haven't had a chance to check him out on video or anything. But
very, very athletic.
Yeah, athletic New York City guy. You know, almost 12 points a game, more than 8 rebounds a game. Had some blocks, had some steals. That's a position of need. It always is. And I think somebody like that, if he could play a strong four, whether that is as a starter.
Reminds me a little of Doug Thomas, if you remember him.
Yeah, that's going way back. Yeah.
But it does remind me a little of him. Very, very, I mean, a big time. Like if they have a dunking contest, I think Seydou may have the leg up here.
Yeah. And you know, so if he's a 20-minute a game guy, let's just say 20 minutes, starting or come off the bench, it really doesn't matter. That helps Owen Freeman a lot because I think Owen Freeman has first team all Big Ten capabilities. And so you bring him in, he does certain things, it helps your offense, you know, based on that. Now, the Peyton Sanford part of it is a major.
Oh, yeah.
Question. It probably is the biggest question of this offseason because he is one of the five best players in the Big Ten coming back. And
in addition to the basketball, I mean, the leadership would be really, I think that would be really crushing to not have his leadership next year.
Absolutely. I mean, he's a fiery guy. He's all in. You know, he's the type of guy that a loss really wounds him. It kills him. It just eats him up. And you want that with your team. And, you know, he's an Iowa guy. He's from Iowa. His brother's on the team. But, you know, I've seen mock drafts where he's in the first round.
Me too.
And not even in the back part, but like, you know, early 20s. And so, you know, yeah, you can come back and improve upon that, I suppose, but it's hard to turn it down if the opportunity's there. And, you know, he's been at the combine this week, and, you know, I guess his performance on the floor hasn't been great, but that doesn't really matter.
He got dinged up a little bit yesterday, hurt his shoulder, so missed a little time in yesterday's game. But you've watched those games at the combine, Scott. It is garbage bass. It makes
It's the PTL.
It's worse than the PTL. At least in the PTL, you see a couple passes. You don't see any passes in the combine.
Right. Yeah, it's true. It's all b-ball, you know. Yeah. And you know, I remember Jared Utoff going through it, and I don't even think he got the ball. Like
I was there with Reggie and Luke.
Yeah.
Wrecker way back, and I remember Reggie was pissed because power forward like him where you need the ball on the paint, you're not getting it in that setup.
Yeah. I mean, you're getting it on a rebound. That's it.
If you're lucky.
Yeah. So, you know, those things are, that is so overrated. It's really about the medicals. It is same thing in Indianapolis for the football one. It's about making sure that there's no red flags, that things are confirmed. Of course you want to time well, but unless the times vary way more than the eye test, like, wow, that guy ran a 4.2. He doesn't play like a 4.2, or, you know, wow, this guy ran a 4.6 and he should be a 4.4 at a corner. Outside of that, it's really just kind of, I don't know, you know, it's like adding sprinkles on top of a wedding cake, you know. It's just, it's
a lot more for Peyton. Is I think he's done really well at the individual workouts with teams when he's traveled around the country. From what I've heard, or at least the feedback we've gotten from those, is he's done really well in those settings.
You know, I mean, what's his, you know, his comparison, what, Kyle Korver? I mean, is that fair to say that he's got that potential?
Yeah, I've heard Duncan Robinson.
Okay.
You know, current day type game. And I can see that. I think Peyton's a little bit better rebounder, though. I think he brings more than Duncan Robinson. I'm not sure he's as good of a like a consistent of a shooter as Duncan Robinson is, but he's obviously a really, really good shooter. But he rebounds. He's got legit size. I mean, I think he measured in at almost 6'7". Mm-hmm. He's got some length to him. Peyton's not a skinny guy either. He's physically, I think he can work in the Big Ten. I think physically he's ready. So I don't know. I don't think it's a direct comparison to Duncan Robinson. I like the Korver one too. I think people think his 3-point shot, but I think he can add in a little couple area, other areas as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. I see him at a minimum as a second rounder if he wants to be.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, he's probably a guy that will go up and down a little bit, you know. You know, so if it's the T-Wolves, I can see him playing in Des Moines a lot and then bouncing up a lot, you know, kind of the way Luka did previously.
You think he's a better prospect than Wieskamp, Peyton?
That's a great question.
Have the NBA as it's different. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can do one thing super well, like Reggie, rebounding.
Yeah.
You know, Bobby Hansen, shooter. Yeah. You know, I'm talking Iowa guys, you know, guys that stick in the league. Then you've got guys like Keegan, you know, NBA starters. They can do everything. But if you have one really good skill, that can carry it.
Yeah. Gosh. I thought Joe came in with more talent and maybe still be a little bit more talented. But I love Peyton's fire.
Yeah.
I mean, and if there's anything that I've really been bummed about over the last couple of years of men's basketball is that we haven't had a chance to really either write about it, describe it, or people see it, how much he really fucking cares about Iowa basketball, how it just tears him apart, how he is so fired up on the floor. He's everything that Iowa fans want in a basketball player.
I remember him just watching him on the bench at the Big Ten tournament a few years ago when Iowa won it, man. There was nobody on that bench more fired up than him.
Yeah. Just he is everything to that program. And it's been completely overshadowed. I would say it's almost like the year with Bruner and Haluska and Horner, how they've been kind of erased out of the Iowa history because of that first round exit and the fact they played for Alford.
Yep.
And Sanford's career, if he decides to go, will be kind of put in that same box. And that's really freaking unfair because he's an awesome kid, plays his ass off. You know, he's local. He shoots. He does everything you want.
And I've been one of Matt Gaetans, a taller Matt Gaetans, kind of that same dedication.
Right. You know, and Matt is, you know, obviously tremendous, and he's gonna
he's in his own because I mean he grew up Iowa.
Yeah. He grew up here. His dad played, you know, he's from City High. And but you know, I think Peyton is more athletic, you know, than Matt. You know, Matt was a little bit more physical, Matt was a little quieter. I mean, he's very intense.
Yeah.
Peyton lets it all flow. I really wish that, you know, and if he comes back, I hope that that's part of it. You know, whatever people feel about Fran or this team or whatever, don't let that obscure you from how you treasure Peyton Sanford, because I think he has been underrated.
I agree with you. It's got to be tough for him too, because you're weighing, all right, do I take my shot? Do I get it? Because the dynamic of his brother getting a chance to play another season with his brother too shouldn't be dismissed. I mean, that's got to be part of his decision-making process.
Yeah. And, you know, Iowa's going to have to pony up a little bit in NIL, and they can. And, you know, it's just, but, you know, I think it comes down to do teams see him? Do they have a, is he a first rounder? If he's a first rounder, I think you go. I don't think you mess around. If you're not, if you're borderline, if you're top 40, let's say, which I think he probably fits in that category, does a team have a plan for you? Meaning that this is what we see. We draft you. We think you're a two-way player this year. We want to bring you on. You're going to be up a few times. We're going to send you down so you get some experience and come up, kind of back and forth. And then by year two, we think you could be part of, if not the rotation, certainly competitive for the rotation. If somebody's got that kind of a view, I think you got to take that as well. But if you're just going there because if you know your choices are go to the draft, hopefully get picked, and then you don't know versus Iowa simply because of the level of the competition and the money that you'll get from NIL and, you know, being from your home state and stuff, I think you'd have to come back to Iowa. But, you know, I think of him as a top 40 guy. And so maybe it's just me, but I think you stay in the draft.
Looks like, from what I can gather, Scott, the June 16th NBA draft early entrant withdrawal deadline, 5 p.m. Eastern, June 16th.
Oh, I thought he had until May 29th.
That's what I thought, but this one that I see on NBA.com has June 16th. So maybe there's some, because the draft is the 26th. That seems kind of late for them to be. I'll look into this more, and we can talk about it next week. But anyway, he doesn't have to decide today, so there's more time for him to decide. So we'll see how that shakes out moving forward, and we'll talk about it on the podcast. We should probably get out of here. Scott's got another podcast. We've had this thing. No, you don't have another podcast? Or you?
Yeah, no, I do.
Okay,
yeah.
So
yeah,
check Scott out at the Iowa Everywhere podcast coming up at the top of the hour if you're watching us on YouTube. If not, check out for that podcast, too. Listen to all the Hawkeye podcasts.
Yeah.
All right, folks. I think that'll do it today. We got to everything, I think. We didn't get to baseball. Iowa baseball is over in Des Moines playing Florida International. That starts today, Thursday, May the 16th. They also play Friday, Saturday over there at the iCub Stadium, so go check that out if you're in Central Iowa. Brody Breck pitches today, kids. He's from that area of the state and be gone as a likely first, second-round pick coming up, so go check him out. Maybe your last chance today over at what is that thing called? Principal Park? Is that what that is now? I think it's Sec Taylor.
Sec Taylor is what I was going to call it. So, yeah.
Whatever. You guys know. It's not – Des Moines not that big. You'll be able to find it.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Thanks for listening. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Scott and I will be back to talk to you next Thursday. Until then, have a great weekend, and go Hawks. Say goodbye, Scott.
Goodbye, Scott.